This is the Best of Interviews on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Entering the studio here, new Eagles offensive coordinator. Look at this. Mr. Kevin Batula is joining us. Let's get him seated down here.
What's up, guys?
How you doing, Kevin? What a pleasure.
Hey, good to
meet
you,
man. Yeah. James, what a pleasure. John Ritchie, former NFL fullback.
Yeah, absolutely.
How you doing today, Kevin? What a pleasure, man.
Good to meet you guys.
All right.
Doing well. Weather's nice, you know. Nice sunny day. Training camp. Ready to go.
Yeah, no, we're excited to have you, Kevin. And look, first and foremost, congratulations on the offensive coordinator role. Just tell us, just to start a little bit, and welcome to WIP. I believe it's your first formal interview on WIP as well. So hopefully first of many. We're very happy to have you. But just take us inside what that changeover was like, you know, going from what you've been doing more or less the last 4 years here with Nick and the right-hand man and all the responsibilities to moving over to becoming the offensive coordinator, being in charge of calling the plays, all that. How is the transition part to getting to this point in training camp been so far?
It's been really good. I mean, it's really not been that much of a difference because over the last 4 years, I've had my hand on the offense so much and been a part of the day-to-day duties as far as what a coordinator does. I basically was performing the same thing as the last four guys. And working with Nick, you know, he's involved in everything. He wants to hear what we're doing and how we're doing it. So as far as like that kind of change, it's really not much. The difference being is just, you know, just making sure now all the coaches are on the same page with me and what we're doing. And that was kind of similar to what I did before. I was kind of the guy that made sure everybody saw the picture the same way. There's coaches and Nick knew what we were trying to do and the vision of things. So really, it's been pretty smooth. I mean, it really has. I mean, I know the guys tremendously.
Yeah,
we have great
helps.
Relationships,
yeah.
You know, and even the coaches, we've all been together for a while now. So it feels really natural and really good.
What would you say to fans who are nervous about this handoff process?
Mm-hmm.
You know, round here, the last few offensive coordinator transitions, they've been a little bumpy.
Mm-hmm. Or at least the in-house ones certainly have been.
Right. When we promoted from within. What would you say to Eagles fans who are a little bit nervous about this transition?
I think the biggest thing is I've been here through the process and the evolution of what we've done here offensively and kind of the work we've put into it from 21 until now. And seeing the changes from even each coordinator, right? What they wanted to do, maybe their own spin on it, and knowing the personnel. So I've kind of watched it develop and grow and had my hand on it and been a part of it. So I think there's a little bit of a difference in that as far as knowing and seeing where it was in 21 to 22 to 23, what worked, what didn't, and where we need to go with who we have.
In a minute, I'm going to let John nerd out about the offensive stuff with you.
Yeah,
and I know you're a Nick Sirianni coach, so we know you can only say so much,
yes,
and all that.
Correct.
But just the first-time play caller thing, because I think that, you know, coming in, you're as qualified as you can be with your experience in the NFL. The one thing that you don't have on that resume yet, being an offensive coordinator, is the calling plays in an NFL game. Your experience with calling plays in the past in life, and then, you know, that challenge coming into the year of that big step.
So even here, right, the last 4 years, I've been a part of the play calling process, whether it was Kellen last year. Him and I worked very closely together and kind of fed each other plays as we went. And Nick is actively, you know, listening to kind of how we're managing the game. Situationally, I've been heavily involved as far as how we call situational plays. So you can say, like, I've been a part of it the last 4 years, and I don't mean natural to me.
When you say situationally, I'm assuming you're talking about like the red zone specifically,
third
the
and
20.
Down.
When
third
we
and
get into those situations, you know, my experience is right, and you know, John, you played the game. It goes fast, right? And so when you have a good staff that you can lean on, you can be ahead. So if there's somebody you trust and you can play off of them, you can kind of work yourself ahead of things, meaning if it's first down, then we're going second down, and then there's somebody getting you ready for third down so that you're communicating.
Sure.
You know, you can get way ahead of it, get the playing quickly, and you kind of know all week what you were going to call in that moment anyway. So I think that helps, and I've been a part of that, you know. And, and even in my past, when you go all the way back to when I was in New York with Chan Gailey, he was the offensive coordinator, I was a quarterback coach. I called all the plays into Ryan Fitzpatrick and all the quarterbacks for 2 years, so I'm used to handling the headset, used to handling the play calling. You know, I've had my fair share of just calling plays when we were on the ball doing things in New York. So I had a good relationship with how to handle games in those moments and call plays. And it's very natural for me, even the last all the practices. It's very easy. The flow of how to call.
Wow. Plays. This is very reassuring to us.
Well, it is different, right? If you've never done it and been in control of it, you know, it is a different way of talking to a quarterback through a headset, which I've done. So
logistical part. We just think about the, like, what play, but the actual process of it all. Yeah.
Managing the play clock, managing the call, knowing how to get the information in so they hear it appropriately and what they need, you know.
So we've talked a lot on our show about how difficult it is for a young quarterback to adjust to a different play caller year after year. As the play caller, how difficult is it for a young quarterback to adjust to a new play caller year after year?
Well, I think really when you know, for example, you look at Jalen, we've had all these different play callers. The good thing is, right, I've been here through the history of what we've done. So when there's a why or something that pops up, him and I know the backstory behind it.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a, you know, difference
shorthand
in that.
And
we understand just the communication piece of it. And really, Tanner's been here for the most part, too. So that part of it is reassuring probably for them, too, that they know if something pops up, you know, we know where it originated, whether the word changed or not over the last couple of years or even this year, we know what the original piece was.
How much are the words changing? You know, you talk about every offensive coordinator wants to put his individual spin on things. How much do you spin it your way? How much do you preserve what's familiar for the players?
And see, you being a former player, you know that's the hardest part. Like, plays are plays, right? You can go from different offenses to different systems. It's just what you call them. And that's where you got to be careful. The framework of the offense, the verbiage is in place. How I manipulate it is different. You know, I can do what I want with it, but the framework, you got to be careful because the guys know what they know. Like some of these guys, it's this year five, right? And the verbiage system, that doesn't mean the plays are the same. That doesn't mean, you know, we're going to do the same thing, but the verbiage is something that when it comes down to it, we can talk the same way and they know what family they're existing in, what world they're existing in. I mean, like I said, you know, as far as play calls, when you're hearing a certain word, you're like, oh, we're working this concept, or we're working that. That helps and reassures players. So I think it really makes a difference to be careful how much you change that structure.
It's really a positive, I mean, from my perspective, that this is all language that he's familiar with, that everyone is familiar with. For me, that's just comforting as a fan. What sets Jalen Hurts apart from the other quarterbacks that you've coached?
I think the biggest thing is, which is incredible, you know, and everybody talks about, you know, where he's at in his list and stuff, is the guy just wins. Like, he's done it different ways. And I think when you kind of sort of, when say count him out or something said, you know, will he do it? He does it, right? And so I think you just can't underestimate him and his ability to make a play when he needs it, right? I mean, he made critical plays in the Super Bowl. We had to throw the ball a little more, right? Because we ran it okay. And, you know, they were a good run defense. They're a really good defense in Kansas City. And he made plays when we needed him in the pass game and scrambling and doing his thing. And that's, I think, the difference, you know, with him is he can just make plays, ordinary plays, and then just tremendous plays in different ways.
Do you have a goal for run-pass balance for the offense, or is that a week-to-week?
I think it's week-to-week. I mean, that's even last year, you know, you could feel it. It was week-to-week, and some week it was like, wow, that was a lot of runs, but it was like, what was working? So, you know, it's kind of tricky, you know. Yeah.
Real quick, a follow-up on that.
Yeah.
The Saquon thing, a lot of touches last year, the history of guys with that many touches. I know you're not going to tell us the exact plan for Saquon, but how aware are you of that? Like, the workload that he had last year and trying to make sure this guy stays healthy through February, hopefully.
I think, you know, we're aware of it, but I think really what it comes down to is he's aware of it too. He knows himself. And if you even watch him in practice, like, he's really good about knowing, like, okay, I need a breather, you know, and then, all right, I'm back in. I want to go back in. So I think that's a big piece of it too. It's just all of us communicating and being on the same page and understanding, like, hey, how much can I do? How much can I not? And him letting us know, because obviously he's a competitor, so he wants to do it all.
Of course.
But
sometimes you got to protect them from themselves.
But he also does know, if you watch him, he's also really good about understanding, like, no, I'm good. I'm good. Let the other guys go. Okay. So, you know, we had those moments even last year, when Nick was like, you want to go or not?
Young boys
like, no, let him go. Yeah, let him go. So I think it's important.
How skilled is this receiving core? And what's it like calling plays for an offense where you've got AJ and Devontae catching the ball, Dallas Goedert catching the ball? You've got an offensive line like our offensive line protecting things. I mean, that That must feel reassuring.
What a thrill as a coach, right?
It's enjoyable, right? It's fun because you get to put those guys in spots to.
Welcome back. It is the Midday Show live at Eagles Training Camp from the NovaCare Complex for 94 WIP's Champ Camp, driven by Forest River RV, by Camping World, RV sales, service parts, and accessories. Joining us right now in our RV is Eagles defensive lineman Moro Ijoma. Moro, how you doing, man?
Moro.
Doing good. How's it going?
Pretty good, pretty good. So, Moro, when Mitt Williams left, I'm curious, how did your preparation for the upcoming season change, knowing that you were going to be the guy to step in for him?
I think that I went about it the same way. I try to improve every single season and take advantage of opportunities in life and give it my best shot. So that's kind of the way I went about it, just put my best foot forward and keep working.
Does it feel different for you? I know for us as fans, for me, it feels different hearing about you, watching you out there now in the last couple of years. Right? You're a seventh-round pick. You come in here, and it's one of the things where you hear your name in camp, and you're doing well. And then last year you played a little bit more, and we got to know you more. But now there's an expectation, at least from us, that you're going to play more this year. Does it feel different for you on the practice field this summer compared to the last few?
I think the only difference is the amount of reps, but my mentality is the same. I've always been hungry, and I've always wanted more for myself as a player and improve every day, every year, right? So it doesn't feel different from that perspective, but, I mean, I love the competition, and we've got the greatest offensive line in the NFL, so that's been great to go versus every day.
So tell me about that a little bit. What is it like to go against those guys every day trying to improve your pass rush and everything? What is that like for you?
It's everything. You know, competitors enjoy competing, and when you've got all pros, pro bowlers, guys that you can bounce ideas off of, guys you can work things with, guys that you can just compete, it's the makings of a great team.
I'm curious about that because you're not the first person that I heard say that. I think it was who we talked to. Was it Jalix we talked about?
Jalix, yep.
And he was telling us about how he asked different questions about why you set this way and things like that. So when you guys do your one-on-ones and you go watch the film, is that a normal thing to go and ask the offensive lineman why did he do certain things when you're in your pass rush and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think the best thing to do, right? When you're going versus guys like Lane Johnson, Jordan Mulata, Landon Dickerson, Cam Jurgens, right? Those guys have established themselves in the league and they know what works and what doesn't. You know, they know what is harder to go against and what is not, right? So, you know, just a tip here, a tip there can really elevate your game.
What's it like playing for Vic Fangio? What is he like when it's just you guys? Because we've heard some stories that we hear it when he speaks to the media. He seems very honest. Like he's pretty forthcoming. Yeah. Is he like that with you guys? To tell us about Vic, what's he like as a coach?
I think Vic is amazing, and his ability to connect to us has been amazing. And I think that we all have an understanding in the room that we have a job to get done and do it at a high level, and he demands that of us. And you know, we've been able to rally around it, and he's a guy you want to play for.
So this is one of the youngest defenses in the league. It was pretty young last year, but you've gotten even younger this offseason. What is it like for you? It feels like there's a chance, and you know the NFL changes fast, but that you guys could grow together, that last year could just be the start of that. Is it exciting to know the guy lining up next to you, the guy behind you, the guy on the outside? You guys could be together for a while here in Philadelphia.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I think that we've had the ability to just connect, and I think that this defense takes pride in kind of being young and maybe kind of not being known a ton. And we just, it's almost a weight on our shoulder, and we carry it.
What is it like playing next to a guy like Jalen Carter, man?
I mean, it's everything. Jalen, the respect he just deserves and he gets, and then also just learning from him. I think that Jalen Carter is one of the smartest players I've ever been around, from an instinctual type, from knowledge, from the little things of the top of the rush, knowing where to put his body, the lean, you know, finishing a lot of plays that a lot of guys don't. Jalen's talent in football is incredible.
Moro Ijoma with us here, Eagles defensive lineman. So tell us about your story and kind of how you got here, because there's certain players like Jalix Hunt, for example. He played safety, right, and then he's kind of moved up and become an edge. Were you, from the time you got to Texas, an interior defensive lineman? Did you kind of grow into that? How did you get to this point now where it feels like you're one of the better interior pass rushers in the league? Is that something that you grew into, or you kind of had that natural thing when you started playing football and then got to Texas?
Yeah, I think when I got to Texas, they moved me around a lot. I'm kind of a tweener build, you know, a guy that's heavy for defensive end but a little light for interior. And when I was at Texas, I played defensive end. I played head-up nose. I played three technique. I kind of did it all. And being at Philly, we know with the incredible staff and everyone that we've got, I've been able to just learn and improve in my craft. And everything I do is because of the people around me.
Take us back to last year, the Super Bowl. You guys put an incredible performance out there against the Chiefs. And every player we've talked to, there's sense I've gotten is you guys kind of felt you had the right plan going in. You felt very confident going in. Was there a moment early in that game, late in that game, was there a moment you felt like it's working? Everything Vic said, it's happening. Because that's what it felt like for us watching it, where you guys just, and then very few teams do that to the Chiefs, but you guys seemed to know what was coming as it came, and you made a lot of big plays. How did it all come together, and when did you know Vic's plan was really spot on?
Yeah, I think the preparation of this team, and outside of the talent and just the culture, is one of the things that set us apart. Our coaches present us every possible thing that we can see on the football field, and you know, when we get there, we can play fast and free, and I think that's what you saw.
What's it like playing in the city of Philadelphia? So you played in Texas. You played in front of, you know, that, and that's a rabid fan base in Texas for the Longhorns. And now you're here in Philadelphia. You've gotten a chance to play in front of two of the biggest fan bases in the football world. What's it like playing in Philadelphia for you?
Yeah, I mean, one, shout out to the Philadelphia fans. I think us as a team appreciate your energy, and we appreciate everything that you guys do for us. Secondly, it's been amazing. You know, nobody wants to play on a field and not have the fans behind them. Nobody wants that, right? So we've got a tough fan base and a fan base that wants to see the best out of us, wants to see us represent their city, right? You know, wear that logo with some pride, and I think that's amazing.
You know, every defensive player that sat here, I asked them a question. I'm asking you the same thing. What is the number that you have in your head for your sack total this year?
I don't like to set limiting goals in my life, right? So I go give you an answer, but I think that we all want to eat, we all want to get better, and we want to attack it. You know what I'm saying? We've got a great opportunity ahead of us, and that's the plan.
The plan is to start this thing 1 month from today, right, on September 4th against the Cowboys. So where are you guys, like, in mentally in terms of this defense and putting it all in? I know it's probably ahead of where you were a year ago, right, because Vic was new. This is the second year at Vic. But a month until the opener, a few days before the first preseason game, where do you guys feel you are in terms of getting up to speed, where you need to be for the regular season?
Yeah, first of all, shout out my defensive line coach, Coach Hurt. I think that he's done great work with us, and I think that going into our second year with him, he's been able to allow us to play faster, right? Now we see little things, right? In a certain formation last year, we might have got something 90% of the time. If he's telling us that, we can see that a lot quicker. And it just allows me, Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, all those guys in this room, Thomas Booker, to play even faster, to be even more dominant, you know, and that's the goal.
These practices, from my perspective, we've been here a lot during Camp Morrow. They've been pretty long. I mean, longer than maybe when you first got here. I know last year they started to get a little longer, and then this year they feel like they're long again. What is that like for you in terms of recovery, rest, and do you like it? Do you like the long, and I'm not going to say grueling. Grueling was maybe more when Hugh played, but do you like the longer practices?
Yeah, I think that the idea is to never stay the same and evolve, and if the coach believes that the best plan is to practice that way, then that's what we're going to do, right? We're an organization top to bottom that we kind of listen to the top, and what they believe is best for us is what we follow.
All right, Morrow, we appreciate you hopping in here and being part of the show today. Good luck this season, and we're expecting to see a lot of you out there in the field, so good luck and have a great year.
Thank you, guys.
There he goes. Morrow Jomo, Eagles defensive lineman. Joining us right now is Eagles offensive lineman Landon Dickerson right off the practice field. Landon, how you doing, man?
Well, I'm good, but y'all didn't give me no headphones.
Oh, we'll get you some.
There's some headphones right there.
Yeah, we can plug some
headphones. Look, he's a professional.
He's done this before.
So, Len, let's get down to business, man. I know you're getting ready for practice and everything, but how's that lawnmower you got doing, man?
Lawnmower's good. You know, this time of year is a little tough. We do get off days every once in a while, so, Yeah, that's my active recovery.
I'm saying if you're busy or whatever, if you need me to, you know, ride the lawnmower and cut the grass.
Kind of stripes you're throwing down.
I'm just saying. So you doing the stripes now, huh? You doing the fancy.
Pull up the social media thing.
Okay, show me what you're working with.
I think it's on there.
Hugh, when was the last time you mowed a lawn?
Yeah, dude. Will you find your page? Let me see what the stripe.
My damn name.
I can't type. Okay, you got.
Apologize for my profanity.
We're used to you cussing. As a matter of fact, I like the way you break down the huddle sometimes. Have you always been a potty mouth when it comes to being the guy in the huddle?
Am I a potty mouth?
Oh wow! Wait, well, they have you're laying. Are you?
No, not this one.
You've really leaned into the grass thing, huh?
Wait. Where is this at? I don't know how to work social media. Wait, hold up.
But what's up with the grass?
Did you post them yourself, or did your wife post them?
My wife does. How you get it to load more pictures?
You talk about me, you don't even have social media.
We'll find it. It will help us out here.
How many pictures have I posted on it? Jesus.
Well, you didn't even know, apparently.
I guess not.
No, I see you with you're laying in the grass. So you're doing the lines, right?
How can I not find this on here?
Yeah, Hugh, I got to tell you. I think I've seen these photos that he's talking about. You're not ready.
No, dog. Look at this lawn. Like, Joe. Look at that, though. That's a beast.
No, but you got to get the lines. That's what he's talking about.
Yeah, it's the stripes.
So, okay.
I don't even know where they are.
We're here to talk football.
It might
be
a picture on my phone that I think.
Yeah, we're here to talk football, but.
Football's on grass.
So the lines, do you have to change the level of the blade to do all that?
So, no. So, it's actually just which way the grass lays.
Uh-huh.
Right? So, when you mow, like grass, you know, you can it goes back and forth. So, yeah. It's lighter when it's going away from you. So, if you look, it's like a light stripe and then a dark stripe.
Uh-huh.
So, the light stripes, if this is a grass blade, it's laying that way. If it's dark, it's leaning to you.
So is it the direction you go to get it to look a certain way?
Yes, but it has to do with the sun too, because it's just a shadow. That's all it is.
See, Hugh, you're not ready for this. No, you're gonna mess up his lawn.
I wasn't.
See, if you want to get real professional, you go out there, you get the app that tells you where the sun's going, because the best is gonna be when it's perpendicular to the sun. Well, I guess parallel. Sorry.
See, this is what happened. I remember when he got the lawnmower. This wasn't the lawnmower talk that we were having. He's grown into this.
I've been doing it since I was a kid.
Seriously.
Yeah, I grew up.
But you didn't. But you didn't. But so no. you've always had the high powered, expensive lawnmower.
Oh no! I always knew how to do the stripes.
Okay.
No.
But the lawnmower took it to the next level.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's like the quality of tools you got. You know what I mean? Things turn out better.
I hear you. And see, I had it wrong. See, he's been doing this forever. He ain't new to this. He's true to this.
Yeah, so my advice would be maybe let Hugh sit on the lawnmower, but don't let him mess up your lawn. He's going to ruin the whole thing. This guy.
It's like, you know what? It's grass. It grows back.
That's right, it does. All right, Landon. Camp, we're at that stage now where it's like, all right, the preseason is about to start here. It's another practice today. Where do you guys feel you're at? New offensive coordinator. Again, new play car. Feels like we do this every year. But, you know, Kevin's been here a while. Where do you guys feel you are as an offense this far into camp?
Yeah, so the thing is, and I've kind of said it before, right? Like, each team has a one-year expiration on it. I know you come out here to camp, you see, you're like, well, it's all the same name, it's all the same people. I mean, even though we lost a lot of people, new coaches, players, staff, everything, it's still a new team, it's still a new identity every year. So, you know, from OTAs to the start of camp till now, it's really about figuring out, you know, what is our identity as a team, as an offense. You know, Kevin's been around here since Sirianni was here. I think he has a tremendous knowledge of the guys that are here, the group of guys, and kind of how to form them into the best offense possible. And again, we're still, you know, I say pretty early on in the camp here, and we're very specific and very detailed when it comes to installing plays and concepts and making sure that we go over everything. So, you know, we don't even have the entire offense in yet. But we're working, you know, we're installing every day, but we're making sure we don't just like, you know, here's the whole playbook, you know, figure it out today. Yeah, we'll discuss details later. Though for us, it's going into every meeting, sitting down, breaking down these plays, the defense you're going to look, you know, if we're checking anything, and just making sure that once that play goes in, we're detailed on it, and then we can build from there.
You know, I don't know if you know, but there's a guy around here, Elliot Shore Parks, that's charting plays and everything. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, for the last couple of days, Jalen hasn't looked as sharp. So my question to you is this, Landon. How much, as fans, can we glean from the practices that you're having out there and the accuracy and consistency that the quarterback has?
So here's the thing I think people should understand about camp is – you know, there's part of camp where it's you're coming here to get better and refine your skills, and there's also parts of camp where you're trying things out, right? So there's a lot of times we go into some of these drills, and if I want to change my pass set or my, you know, footwork or something, the best time to do it is in practice, because there's an old saying, I don't know who told me this, but is don't make shit up on game days, right? Yeah, that'll get you in trouble.
That's profound.
You know, I don't analyze quarterback play probably how you guys do. Again, I think Jalen's doing a tremendous job. I think he came out today, did well. Our defense has been doing well. And I think seeing that competition back and forth, and, you know, you come out one day, maybe defense gets better of you. Well, that gives us some fuel for the next day to come out and say, hey, offense, we got to pick it up. We got to come out here and execute today. And it's just competing every day back and forth.
Tell us about how Tyler Steen is doing. It feels like he's the guy now, right, at right guard. That's been the one spot in your line last few years that's moved around and changed a little bit. But Tyler's been here, and now it feels like his shot to really play and start for a full season. Where do you notice him and his development?
Yeah, so I think Steen has done a tremendous job as just kind of growing up as a player. And I mean, you know, you look at it like once guys get to the NFL, you're a grown man, all this stuff. But, you know, a lot of times these are kids coming out of college. They got a lot of things to figure out about, you know, how to practice, how to conduct yourself as a, you know, professional athlete. Because I know in college a lot of times there's a lot of support systems. And the NFL has that too, but you're not getting babysat anymore. There's nobody going to tell you to go do this, go get treatment, go get extra work. And I think for him, he's finally, after the years he's been here, every year he's kind of grown and figured out, like, this is how I have to conduct myself as a player. And I think from last season to OTAs till this season, he took a tremendous step in upping his game and figuring out what he can do to come out here and be better and compete for this job.
We're talking to Landon Dickerson, our Eagles offensive lineman, after practice. Landon, what have you noticed with the growth of the guys up front on defense, the guys you got to block every day? You know, we've had a lot of those guys in here with us the last 10 days or so we've been at camp. Morrow yesterday, Jahad Campbell. I mean, it feels like the youth you guys have up front on defense, linebacker and defensive line. What do you notice in trying to block those guys on a daily basis?
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, obviously everybody kind of saw last year the young talent that we had up front there with, you know, guys like Morrow, with Jalen Carter, with Nolan Smith, with Jordan Davis. And, you know, they're young guys, but they're executing and they're playing at a high level. And I think that, you know, having Coach Fangio come back and, you know, everybody doing a little self-scouting in the offseason, coming back, and, you know, the looks that they've given us is a little different than what we've seen from them in the past. And I think, you know, it's props to, you know, Coach Fangio and those guys for understanding, right, you have great players and – let's put them in a great scheme and make it even tougher for everybody, right? It's, you can line up guys, you know, one-on-one to rush all day, but you start throwing in defensive schemes and stuff, and I think they've just done a tremendous job of, you know, taking great players and putting them in a great position defensively.
You know what, Landon? Mauro Jomo told us yesterday that you guys share information. And I was a little bit jealous when I heard that about pass rush.
Yeah.
And how to get better at pass rush, because I can tell you, when I played, we didn't do that. It was about trying to go out there and win the day and look good for the camera. So yeah. So where did that come from, and why are you guys so eager to like share that information?
Yeah, so I think it comes down to, you know, we understand that we want to be the best team possible. So, you know, if we're going against each other and I see you doing something that, you know, you're projecting something, or your pass rush, you're giving away a move, or you only got this one move that's real easy to defeat, right? For me, it doesn't help me if you're going to do the same thing and I can beat it. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to help you in the game, right? Because if I can see it, there's other offensive linemen out there that know it too. So, you know, it's sharing back and forth. And, yeah, I want to talk you through how to beat me, because if I can make you better, then when game day comes and there's another guy out there, you're going to be able to beat him in the same way. So we always – we're taught – there is that competition, right, when we're pass rush going against each other, but there's also the aspect of, yeah, we're on the same team.
Iron sharpens iron.
When Sunday comes, right, yeah. It's like, I want you to be, you know, the most dangerous guy out there, and then they give it back to me, same way.
Landon, great stuff. We appreciate you hopping in, man. Good luck this season, and once again, congrats from last year. And if you need someone to help you with the lawn
– I got you, dog.
Hughes offered, man.
Yeah. I need a resume, right?
I gotta work on my grass cutting skills, but I'll get back to you. Give me a couple months. because I gotta work. Yeah. I gotta perfect my grass cutting skills.
Yeah,
give me a couple months.
Just bring back a little portfolio.
Yeah,
just show me some pictures there, and we can work on it.
All right, sounds good. There he goes, Landon Dickerson, Eagles offensive lineman. Yes, it is that time of the week. A Fransky Friday on the Midday Show, sponsored by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm, as we welcome in the voice of the Phillies, Scott Fransky, as the Phillies get set for their longest road trip of the season, starting this weekend in Texas. Scott, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Well, Scott, to be honest, you know, with the pitching looking like it's looking right now, we're a little nervous, man. You gotta talk us off the ledge a little bit. So should we be worried about Wheeler?
I don't think so. I talked to him the other day, and he seemed to kind of brush it off and seemed like it was no big deal, just general soreness and not something he was at all concerned about. I think anytime your ace says he's a little more sore than normal, you've obviously put your antenna up, but by all accounts, everybody seems to indicate that it's not a big deal. And so, I guess we'll find out, you know, we'll see Sunday what the velos look like and what his stuff looks like and see if there's any more cause for concern. But, you know, they say it's not a big deal, so we'll move forward thinking it's not a big deal.
I like that, and hopefully it's not. Hopefully Sunday he looks like the Wheeler we always see here. Scott, there is one other question mark now. All of a sudden in the rotation, which has just been clearly their strength all year, and it's still a great rotation, but feels like Ranger Suarez, the last four or five outings, just not the same as he was, you know, mid-May until late June. And I think for a lot of us, it's reminding us of last year because he was so great, and then it just wasn't as great. What are you noticing with Ranger? I mean, the velocity's down, but he doesn't pitch with great velocity. That doesn't typically worry me as long as he can still get outs.
Yeah, it just seems like he's, you know, the other day there was the, you know, a little infield dribbler, and all of a sudden there's kind of a situation. And then basically just about back-to-back pitches kind of got ambushed there, and all of a sudden you're down 4-0. His command wasn't great the other day. He's obviously shown the ability to pitch at a lower velocity with great command at times. It wasn't really there the other day. Is that the start of a longer-term trend like last year? Oh, you know, he keeps saying he's healthy. Everybody says he's healthy. I don't think that was fully the case last year. I think he was bad. You know, obviously he went through the back issue last year and just never seemed like he was the same afterwards. So, I think it's still a guy you continue to watch and continue to monitor. And if his command is good, he's fine at whatever velocity. I'm not worried about that if his command works.
You know what? We were talking about it earlier, Scott, you know, we were talking about Andrew Painter. Is it safe to say we could put the Andrew Painter coming up thing to rest now?
I don't know about to rest, but I don't know that it's, you know, he hasn't certainly proven that he belongs here yet. Like, he's still clearly working through it.
Mm-hmm.
So until he starts putting together, you know, an outing and two and three that are in a row that kind of show you that he's totally ready, there's no need to bring him up, right? There's no immediate need to do that. So unless there was some dire circumstance, I think he stays there for now. And, obviously if there's a need, if some injuries happen or whatever, and they need somebody to pitch, he's as good a candidate as anybody that's down there.
Gotcha.
But I don't know that you put it totally to rest, but certainly I think it's a little bit on the back burner.
Yeah, and the fact that they have a surplus of starting pitching still, it helps them put that on the back burner. Scott, speaking of that, Taijuan Walker pitched well the other day. Aaron Nola down at Lehigh Valley is working his way back, probably one more start, and then it seems like he could be ready maybe next weekend. Scott, do you think there could be a way and a way for them to go to a six-man rotation to maybe help Wheeler feel his best and maybe help Ranger save a few bullets for October? And even Sanchez, who's been great, we're going to get to a point where he's probably going to make more starts this year than he ever has. Do you think that could be under consideration when Nola gets back?
Yes, I do think it's under consideration. I know there's some stretches there as they get a little bit later on where you start to run out of some off days and maybe, you know, you don't have a chance to give the guy an extra day of rest because of an off day. So I do think that is still something they will consider. Obviously, you got to get Nola back healthy first, really, before you go that route. But when he does, I do think, you know, whenever he's here, whenever he's you know, fully healthy and ready to go to work again at the big league level. I think that's absolutely something they're still still considering. I wouldn't shock me at all if they go that route.
Scott Fransky with us here on a Fransky Friday. Phillies set for a road trip starting tonight down in Texas. All right, Scott, the six-day platoon in the outfield is up. And what's interesting is it worked. I mean, the guys really, they hit. I mean, Kepler hit, and they got a lot at everyone for the 6 days. But now it's like, all right, well, Topper's going to reset, and it doesn't seem like it's going to be as easy moving forward with lefty-righty. They're going to face two righties in a row this weekend. Scott, what's your guess on how they're going to play this? Because they have to make more decisions every day on who's going to play.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me to see Bader get some starts against a right-handed pitcher like, say, tonight against the Merrill Kelly, somebody like that. I think higher velo right-handers, Kepler still gets that assignment. But guys who maybe aren't, you know, who are going to mix it up a little bit more, you might see Bader get a chance to start in center field against a righty or two. I really don't know for sure what they're going to do, to be honest with you, but it would not surprise me if Kepler continues to get starts, especially against, you know, high velo right-handed.
Scott, as we look forward on this, Marsh continues to play well, and Bader is the one they traded for. It feels like when Bohm gets back, which could be soon, Otto Kemp could maybe be a natural platoon partner for Marsh and left. Do you think that he ends up being the right-handed bat for Wilson there once Bohm is back?
Could be. Yeah, I think they like his at-bats. Especially they like his at-bats against lefties. So I think that's absolutely a consideration. I mean, Wilson probably would get to a few more balls in left than Otto Kemp, but they're kind of similar players. I think Kemp has done a pretty good job of adjusting out there, and I think the balls that he can get to, he will. His reads have not been bad. I just don't think he's quite as fast as Wesson Wilson. So, you know, that might be a consideration, but I do think if you're going platoon, you're doing it primarily for the bat. And if that's the case, if you're going for the bat, then you get the better bat. And if you think Kempton's that guy, then he gets that nod in left field as a platoon partner.
Scott, last time we talked to you was right after the Phillies had traded for Duran. We had you on when they got him, and then we were waiting for the Bader deal, and then we talked to you as we were getting ready for that first series. What was it like watching him Friday night, Sunday night, being as part of that as Duran debuted here with the Phillies?
That was really cool. I mean, obviously there's so much to watch when that's unfolding and you're in the stadium. I mean, I know if you're watching on TV, you're stuck with whatever pictures they get you, which were great, by the way. They did an amazing job with that over on the telecast. But there's just so much to watch and to try to take in. And the electricity of the fans during that homestand, really throughout, I mean, even the Baltimore series, I mean, to get 40-plus thousand all three nights for, you know, not a real good opponent in the middle of August in a weeknight, the fans clearly are excited. They're engaged. They're fired up. They're clearly fired up about Duran. And I know everybody can't wait to see what that feels like and looks like in October, but it certainly looked a lot like October this past weekend.
It sure did. Speaking of electricity in the building, Scott, I was there for the Monday night game against Baltimore when Schwarber hit the two home runs, including the Grand Slam, and the MVP chants were coming from all the sections, including the one I was in. Scott, what do you think the chances are Schwarber can win this thing? I mean, he kind of went from not in the mix nationally conversation-wise to suddenly in it. His odds went to second behind Ohtani. Do you think he's got a real chance to win the NL MVP?
He's got a real chance, yes. I think the Phillies winning the division would certainly help that cause. You know, sometimes you get some recency bias with some votes there, so having a big finish would also probably help him out a little bit. But yeah, I think he's got a legit shot. I think he's absolutely worthy of it, regardless of whether he plays the field or not on a daily basis. I think he's 100% worthy of being an MVP candidate and being a legit choice for a lot of the riders.
Scott, let's end with this. The road trip that starts tonight, Texas, Cincinnati, Washington, their longest trip of the year. They haven't played great on the road. It felt like it was better, and then it's kind of come back to more 500. Feels like a big one, including, Scott, the series after this one, the one in Cincinnati, the beginning of next week. That feels like a really big one to me, considering you look at the standings, and I think Cincinnati, if there's one team that's outside the playoffs that could jump in, it's Cincinnati. If the Phillies could play well there, that really could create some more distance between them and that last wildcard team.
Yeah, these two series are pretty big. I mean, obviously Washington's not playing for anything, and they're not playing very well right now. So, and that's a ways off, you know, another week to go before you get there. You've got two playoff contending teams. I mean, the Rangers have really played well. All of a sudden, the guys like Seager and Simeon are starting to catch fire at the plate. They've, you know, fired Kelly. We know he can be tough sometimes on the Phillies. You're going to get some good pitching this weekend, and Kelly and DeGrom, Patrick Corbin, they know well. But you've got a team that's fighting for a spot in the American League, too, in Texas. So they've got a lot to play for, this team and the Reds. I think it's absolutely going to be a tough series and a tough trip. And, you know, we'll see how they come out of it. Obviously, you know, this Texas team, like I said, they're starting to hit. Their pitching's been great all year, and they're starting to hit, so they're dangerous.
Yeah, they are. Kelly today, I believe DeGrom tomorrow. It should be a fun series. Scott, we'll be listening. Enjoy the road trip and a few days back in your home state of Texas. Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, let's know if I see Micah Parsons running around. Yeah,
you let us know.
And make sure you get you some good barbecue, too. I know you know the good barbecue spots.
Yeah, we'll find a spot.
I'm sure you will. Scott, thank you, and have a great series. We'll talk next week.
All right.
Have a good one.
There he goes. Scott Franzi. He'll be on the lookout for Micah, who I don't believe did not show up to Cowboys practice yesterday for the first time.
Oh, he did.
It's the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. It is Mount Rushmore week. Coming up at 2:30, or rather 3:30, Jack will present his first Mount Rushmore of Mount Rushmore week, and it will be the Mount Rushmore of Elliot Takes.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a weekly top five.
Every week. Well, you keep updating your resume.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Yesterday, my friend Ange texted me and told me that your cheesesteak take, that it is better on a wrap than a roll, should have you suspended for a week from the radio station.
I mean, has she had a cheesesteak on a wrap?
It's a he. It was
Angelo Castaldi.
It was not Angelo.
I thought you meant like Ange.
No.
Has he had a cheesesteak on a wrap?
I'm sure he has. A big eater. Big food guy.
Well, I'd be curious to know if he has before he gave an opinion on it.
It is Tuesday at 3 o'clock, which means Tuesdays with Elliot. The Eagles did practice today. Elliot was there. We will get what happened. But first, it is, as I said, Mount Rushmore week, Elliot.
Yes.
We did reveal the official Phillies Mount Rushmore of staff voting and listener voting. Mike Schmidt, Chase Utley, Jimmy Rollins, Steve Carlton.
Dude, Steve Carlton getting on after all I took last year for putting him on mine.
That
is
not
insane.
What you did.
Like, I put him on, you would have thought I put Matt Geiger on this.
That is not what happened.
You are doing a bit now. No, you're normally not doing a bit. It wasn't that you put Steve Carlton on. It was that you kept Mike Schmidt off.
Well, I think you should have a pitcher represented on the Mount Rushmore.
Well, you keep changing your qualifications.
That's exactly what I said last year. Yes, I said you should have a pitcher represented on the Mount Rushmore.
And you had three players from the 08 team.
Correct, because it's the best run in franchise history.
Okay.
Well, even though they won it.
I mean, it's no better than the 80 run.
It's 77-83. They made two World Series and also won 100-plus games.
Did they go back-to-back?
But they went to two World Series.
No, they didn't go back-to-back. So they went back-to-back.
What's the difference between taking 1 year off, 2 years off?
What's harder, going back-to-back or going twice in 3 years?
They lost the second year.
I know. They lost the second time in after 82. So
Elliot.
They did.
Elliot.
I mean, honestly, what's harder, going back-to-back or going twice
Elliot,
in 3 years?
Elliot, what's your Phillies Mount Rushmore?
Just what do you got?
I think you'll be happy to hear you all successfully bullied me, and Mike Schmidt is on my Mount Rushmore.
Will you just admit he should be on it?
Yes, again, I've never... It's not an anti-Mike Schmidt thing.
Not at all. Nope.
I think the 08 triplets, if you want to call them that, like, can't be separated. So I have Howard, Rollins, Utley, and Schmidt.
I just put Hamill.
So wait a minute. She took Carlton off?
Yes.
Yeah, you're a moron.
Yes, because I didn't feel like dealing with everyone being like, how could you have Carlton on
Carlton
again?
Was a better pitcher than Hamels.
I don't have Hamels on
there. Oh, you have Howard.
Howard.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, but even...
I have the three from 08, and I have Schmidt to make everybody happy.
He did it wrong again.
Of course he did it wrong.
I don't think I did it. This is exactly what you wanted last year.
You got to take one of the 08 guys.
No, I'm not taking one of the 08 guys.
Well, then it's wrong.
It's
wrong,
not wrong.
Mount, right?
Don't let him bully you.
08's the best stretch in franchise history.
It's no different than the 80s.
Again, I think it is because they went back to back.
Yes.
And would you say the 2011 team, arguably the best team in franchise history?
Most wins,
elite pitching staff, like had all the guys on it.
They were fraudulent though. Like the offense died and the bullpen was horrible.
Well, talk about the offense dying. You have Bryce on yours, so I don't know. You know,
have you seen his last 20 games?
Yeah, and they're 10-11 in those games.
Now we're doing first baseman win loss stats.
Well, everyone does it for Schwarber. Every time he wins, it's like
you
have to pay him.
That's at the leadoff position, which is the argument.
Well, I've always said he should hit leadoff.
So you say a pitcher has to be on the Mount Rushmore, right?
I believe that, but honestly,
but also, but Hamels also is not on your Mount Rushmore.
All you guys, the kerfuffle I caused last year by not putting Schmidt on.
Wait a minute, didn't Hamels win World Series MVP?
Again, this is very simple. I think the three of Howard, Rollins and Utley have to be on. Like, that's where it starts. You put
even
those
the World
three.
Series MVP. Like, he won the World Series MVP.
And LCS MVP.
I agree. You bring that up for other
people. He's definitely in. Yeah.
Okay.
And by the way, you want to talk about hypocrisy.
Yeah.
You have Zach Wheeler, if I'm not mistaken, number one on your list of Philly athletes. But you don't think pitchers should win MVP.
No.
And you don't think DHs should win MVP.
No.
But you think the best athlete in the city, you're okay with him only playing one every 5 days.
Yes.
But when it comes to awards and stuff, then that's a problem.
Yes, because it's not the most valuable Philadelphia athlete.
But that is part of it.
No, no. See, you can say it's part of it.
Well,
I said it is best.
Like,
so Zach Wheeler as a pitcher, which is important, just not as important as an everyday player, I do not believe should win MVP. But could that person be the best athlete in Philadelphia? Yes.
Right, but when you take the best athletes, I think you have to consider their importance to the team. Like,
yes,
Joel is clearly, during his stretch, was probably more important to the team than any other Philly athlete in the city.
Yes.
And he deserved extra credit for that.
Yes.
So what I'm saying is, Jalen, why I had him number one, is because of his importance and the responsibility he has. What you're saying by not giving Schwarber MVP or saying the pitcher shouldn't win it is, I think that's counter.
First of all, it has nothing to do with DH. The DH MVP argument is a separate argument. I've always been that way. I don't like
you
the
have
DH.
Been. I respect your consistency
on
that.
And I don't have Schwarber number two in Philadelphia or anything
right.
like that.
I had him five.
By the way, I think
I had him higher on my list than Bryce.
Me too.
Okay. Are we done with the Phillies thing or do we?
You brought it up. I do have a Schwarber opinion.
Okay.
Get it in there.
Yeah, what do you got on Schwarber?
Schwarber should be able to win MVP.
Yeah, sure. Okay. But, like, two things on Schwarber. One, I think this year is way more special than Bryce's MVP year. Point blank.
Way more.
Yeah.
I didn't even remember Bryce's MVP year.
Yes.
Well, because you guys are frauds.
Like, it really puts into perspective how forgettable that MVP was.
Sure.
But the second one is...
That's a little rough, but
this is obviously a super impressive year from Schwarber. Like, I don't think it's a slam dunk they should re-sign him the way people make it out to be. I get the emotional part of it.
215.
But I agree with you. But, like, this, how we all feel now could not be how we feel in October. He's on the older side. Like, I don't know.
Isn't he younger than Bryce?
You're paying
I think they're same age, right?
You're paying top dollar for him. You're not getting him on any type of discount. You're supposed to pay for future production, not how exciting his last year was. Like, everyone, I think, I get the excitement, it's fun, but I think people could feel differently soon.
Let me tell you
And
this.
I would not extend him right now, I'll tell you that. Like,
no,
point blank.
They won't.
Yeah.
They won't.
Let me tell you this. I love all three of y'all.
Yeah.
But this three-man weave I have to do with you three when it comes to these teams. Now, you want to sabotage the Philly success moving forward. Because
They got knocked out in the first round last year.
I understand that. Yeah. My point is taking a guy of this caliber off the team. If this was an Eagle, you'd be saying they need to re-sign him tomorrow.
I don't think I would.
Oh, my goodness.
So here's what I would say about Schwarber.
You wanted Brandon back, and he's 38.
If I could only keep Brandon.
Graham.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's because Brandon Graham costs like $3 million. Schwarber.
I'm just saying, though, when a player is playing well, you're in favor of the Eagles getting that guy locked up and signing him.
Yeah.
A guy like Kyle Schwarber having this caliber of a season, and you're okay with him leaving while the Phillies haven't fulfilled a championship run yet. How is that possible?
Because if they don't do it this year, the window is shut on this core. If they flame out again in the playoffs and the bats go cold, we have to be honest that this team is not winning it. Right?
I disagree.
And also with Schwarber, if you could tell me I could keep one player on the Phillies, non-pitcher, it would probably be Schwarber from the current group. But that's not the situation we're in. Like, Harper and Turner are under contract. So you have to recommit to Schwarber for probably, at this point, maybe 4 years, potentially.
And you need to. You know why?
I don't think you need to.
Because you have no one to replace what he does.
I agree. He's critically important, but he's older, and I think the team is already... He is, isn't he?
But he's not old.
I don't... I mean, how old is he?
He's also going to age pretty well if he's playing DH.
Maybe.
He's getting better with age. I mean, like, these guys do hit.
I don't get why everybody's so quick to double down on a team that's been disappointing in the playoffs. So we'll see what they do.
But they're
going to
let other players go. You can still keep the good players.
Well, what players are they going to let go?
Well, like, I think Cassian's probably gone after the year. I think, like, JT could be gone.
But again, it's not about whether or not, like, I want to keep Schwarber. It's about committing 3 to 4 years.
Yes.
Like, that is a massive commitment.
What's the alternative?
The alternative is you let him go, you shed salary, and you start the rebuild that they probably need. Or at least some type of rebuild.
You see that park down there?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I agree. Schwarber's
awesome. You think a rebuild is going to produce that?
You can't make decisions that way. You can't make decisions that way. You can't make decisions based off how good the crowd is.
They just did that.
And how's it worked out for him?
No, I'm talking about they just did that at the trade deadline. They made a decision to make sure they keep butts in the seats.
No,
so they held on to young talent.
Right, that's part of it. That's part of it. But I think they also did it to help this core win. Like that.
Those young players aren't going to help this core win. You just told me.
No, this year, I'm saying. This year's team. I'm saying they traded for Duran because they wanted to help this year's team.
That's
correct?
One player.
Yeah.
They decided not to go all in to get a bat. They could, because it would have cost them more.
Correct, yes.
It would have cost them more. They decided not to do that.
Correct.
So I'm saying those young players that they decided to hold on to aren't going to help this team win anything right now.
I agree. So but what I'm saying is, like you talked about, did you see the park last night? And it's awesome when Schwarber hits those home runs and the videos are crazy. But you cannot make a $160 million decision for 4 years of this team or whatever it ends up costing to sign him based off of how electric the atmosphere is.
Oh, they do it all the time.
But I don't know if that's the best way to make a decision.
Well, if you're a businessman and you worry about who comes through the turnstiles, yeah, having names that matter on the back of the jersey is what sells.
I agree with that.
Because when the team was in first place under Gabe in the September, they were still averaging about 20,000 fans down there.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the air. We were talking about it. Nobody cared.
Right.
Because they were being led by Rhys Hoskins was their best player, or Odubel Herrera, or whoever it was. You got actual names that matter now. So it does matter about keeping those guys in pinstripes. To me, it's a terrible signal that you're giving to your fan base when you allow a guy like Cal Schwarber to walk. What are you saying to the fan base? That next year doesn't matter? We're rebuilding because Trey Turner and Bryce Harper is going to lead us now?
So what if they lose in the first round and the bats go cold again? Like, how do we feel about this group then?
I'm already prepared for that because Dave Dombrowski didn't do anything to help the offense.
Well, but there's still guys on the offense. Bryce, Trey, Schwarber. I mean, Schwarber.
You asked me about the bats going cold, so I'm telling you that's not going to surprise me.
So if Schwarber has a bad first round, are we all still like sign the check, pay him whatever?
Yes.
Okay. See, that's where I guess I differ. Like,
you know why? Because
if I watch
a five
game
series doesn't outweigh what I would just watch for 160 games.
But I think a five game series does outweigh holistically with this team. Now, Schwarber's season is definitely special. I'm not diminishing what he's doing. But this Phillies team has been really good, and they've gone cold in the playoffs, and I think that has to change how you view. I've seen Sixers teams that have been great in the regular season. They lose in the playoffs, and that's all that matters. Like, what you do in the postseason matters more. And if they flame out again, yes, it's going to hurt emotionally for Schwarber to leave, but I think they have to do what would be smart
for
the
team. Is it easier
to
win in the postseason in baseball or basketball?
I think it's different, but I'd say I get your point. Greater teams win in basketball because it's best of seven. Like, I get all that.
It's easier to win in basketball.
I think it's just different because it is harder. You have to win 28 games to win the. Or no, that's not right. You have to win whatever
16.
Right, best of seven the whole way. Yeah,
yeah.
I think it's more of a gruel. Like it's more of a
grind.
A grind.
Gruel. Yeah.
Gruel is correct. Is that not right?
No.
All right, it's more of a grind.
Yeah. You say it's more grueling.
More grueling.
I've never heard of gruel.
No, yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why I talk.
Yeah. I got mine out of the way.
Yeah. You're, agreement with him?
Yes, okay. I'm good.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So I hear what Eagles point he brings up.
My guess is that Schwarber costs less than everybody's thinking, and it'll be fine. That would be my gut.
All right, well, then we're all happy.
Yeah.
When the back's
Elliott gets to
again.
Save money, and I get to keep Schwarber.
Well, yeah, all right. We'll
Spike
move
agrees
on to the
with
next
me. I can
well,
tell.
Because
he's ready to let Schwarber walk.
No. What I'm saying is.
Doesn't want him to have an MVP.
I don't want. Oh,
didn't think he was
MVP.
Important.
That's not. Wait a minute. Hold on.
he was important.
Hold on. Not what I said. By the way, Schwarber.
Only Zach Wheeler can play once every 5 days and be considered.
Well, that's what the pitchers do.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah, only he can do one.
Yeah. What about that, Spike?
What about it?
Yeah, he pitches once every 5 days.
That's what pitchers do.
No, what I'm saying, though, you still don't.
I wouldn't give him the MVP either.
But the pitchers have won it.
Yes, but I wouldn't.
I saw a closer in there who won an MVP.
Well, that's insane.
Who won MVP?
I think Dennis Eckersley.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Jim Constandi in the 1950 Phillies won NL MVP as a reliever.
Would you guys be
sad? He's
not
on the Wall of Fame, but Ed Wade is.
Would you guys be sad at all if Schwarber broke Howard's record?
Nah,
no.
Yeah? Oh, I think it'd be. I think it's one of the first times in my life where I'm like, looking at the older athlete.
Yeah, because you hate the Phillies. I know.
I'm rooting for
you're propping up the Eagles. You're tearing down the Phillies.
The Eagles are way better than the Phillies.
You know that they're coming for that
ass. But they are, so.
How is... do you want to do Jalen's day at camp, or do you want to do Corian Bennett first?
The new Eagles. Let's get Bennett out of the way first.
Right. Yes. Corian Florida?
I thought you were saying a caller at first. No. Ja'Cory from Bennett.
No.
Yeah.
Ja'Cory Bennett.
Ja'Cory and Bennett.
Ja'Cory and Bennett.
Is, yeah. Oh, is it and Bennett?
Yeah, Ja'Cory and Bennett.
Oh, God, these names.
Sorry. Yep. Yep.
I know.
I haven't even got Johan down yet.
Yeah, nope.
Johan Duran?
Jawan.
Jawan
Duran.
Jawan Duran.
Yeah.
That Duran. Rhymes at least.
Duran.
Yeah. they trade Thomas Booker for Ja'Cory Bennett. Ja'Cory Bennett, a cornerback from the Raiders.
Yes.
Tell us about this trade, why you think it happened.
And oh, it's Ja'Corian.
Yeah, that's what I said.
No, I thought you were saying in Bennett.
Oh,
yeah, that's what I thought it was
saying.
A call.
Yeah, like, that's what I thought you were saying.
Ja'Corian.
Ja'Corian Bennett. Yes. Gotcha. Yes. Everything is hard.
Like... Good use of that one. So why do you think it happened? And tell us about Bennett.
So Bennett to me is kind of this year's Isaiah Rodgers. Isaiah Rodgers, when they picked him up from the Colts, had played, I think it was 2 years, maybe 1 year, and had really good advanced numbers. Like he was an underrated guy that the analytics, for lack of a better term, community liked because he had good advanced numbers. That is who Bennett is to me. Bennett has played 2 years in the NFL. He had a shoulder injury last year, so he missed half the year. But when he played last year, quarterbacks targeting him had the fourth lowest passer rating in the NFL, like right up there with guys like Patrick Surtain. So small sample size. Isaiah Rodgers also had really good advanced numbers and coverage when he was with the Colts before the Eagles got him. So that's the profile of the player. He's 5'11". He's played exclusively on the outside, both in college and in the pros. So he has the physical makeup that you would think he would play inside, but he's only played on the outside. So we'll see where they project him, but he is an outside guy. So in terms of why they made the trade, I think it's to compete with Keeley and Adoree for the starting job. And
they must not be super confident with what they're seeing out of either guy.
Agreed. Right?
Because Booker played last year.
And yeah,
he was a not an important player, but he
was part of the rotation.
He was part of the rotation. Yeah, he was a real player.
Booker probably wasn't going to make the team, but he was not a throwaway guy they were going to cut. I mean, he would have been here till the end, maybe been back on the practice squad. And so from that perspective, I will say it means Gabe Hall is probably making the team. And,
oh, really?
Yeah, Gabe? I'm guessing you guys don't want to hear all about him. But,
no.
But I think it's good for him. And then in terms of the cornerback position, yeah, I mean, Vic said yesterday that neither player is separating themselves. It's very close. And I don't think they trade for this guy if they're not open to him winning the job. So I think at this point, if I had to put the odds, like they'd all have an even odd. Keeley, Adoree, and this new guy.
As Ja'Cory Bennett, as being a starter.
As being winning the job, correct.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one thing I like that they did is they did this now rather than later.
And that's telling too.
Yes.
Like when they did it.
They saw him and they're like, we need another guy in there.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, the other thing too is, would they trade Keeley? Like it's something I've been thinking about today.
Is so
trading for what?
I mean,
if he's not
going to
be the starting corner.
No, I meant trading to get what?
No, right. I don't know. Like, you'd probably get another guy player on the roster, player. Similar,
yeah.
Where maybe he has a high upside but hasn't met it.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Especially if you got a guy, if you know you're going to wind up releasing Keeley, and there's a player that you don't want to hit the open market, so what you do is you
like
call that team.
Yeah,
you call that team and say, you know, I know you guys are going to release him, okay.
Right, just swap.
Swap,
now, the thing Keeley has going for him is he played the most special team snaps on the team last year. So they could just value him that way. But if Adoree's going to be the backup and this Bennett guy wins the job, I don't know what Keeley's future is with the team.
Well,
so maybe they'd sell some high is not a great term, but sell somewhat high on him when they could.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't see this trade. If I was Keeley Ringo, I wouldn't see this trade and be like, oh, my camp's going great.
Yeah, I'm super excited to welcome to the room.
Right.
Yeah. A young, especially the player's young, player they traded for.
And I think
they came out together.
I think drafted one pick before Keeley.
Yeah, that's what I saw, yeah. Mm-hmm. So they were in the same draft. They were probably at the combine together. Where'd this kid go to school at?
Maryland, I think.
Yeah, he didn't play him.
Yeah, but...
The best of interviews on Sports Radio 94 WIP.